suggested, it was the group that splintered having a conversation in a meeting, and it was suggested, and they stated that a smaller group would have a better chance at federal recognition. And that's when the split happened. It was after our proposed finding came out. And so, you know.
So it was instigated by
exactly.
the BIA.
Yep.
Other questions? Yes.
I was just wanted to write to speak on treaties as far as those that exist as far as the
just world, you know, you would think that these various treaties and agreements would be honored, but it's been my experience personally and also what I've gleaned from the things I've read and the things I've heard, that especially in the case of the United States, if pressed, the United States will constantly refer back to the Marshall decisions, this idea of wardship of domestic dependent nations, which Marshall himself said was based on the doctrine of discovery. And so in a nation that says that there's a separation between church and state, the foundation of Indian law is a papal decree, and it's still in effect. And then you deal with the reality of the Lone Wolf decision, which you guys probably know the particulars better than I do, but from my simplistic understanding, a Kiowa Indian named Lone Wolf objected to the fact that the United States was not upholding their end of the treaty between the two nations. And the decision, when it finally made it to the Supreme Court, the decision of the Supreme Court was that the United States has plenary power over the tribes, which in my understanding is absolute power. So in other words, even when there is an agreement, the United States says the tribes are obligated to uphold their end of the bargain. But the United States is not under any such obligation. It can do whatever it pleases because it is the superior or the conquering power. That's the reality that you deal with. So despite the friendly language and all of those other things and all of these agreements, when you get down to the bottom line, that's the reality that you have to deal with as indigenous people in this industry.
Just one comment. I'm not intimately familiar with Native American treaties, but in general, what was done was that the European settlers, both here in the United States and in South America and in Africa, for instance, would enter into treaties with Native sovereigns, and they would recognize the sovereignty of the tribe or the group to the extent of their ability to enter into an international agreement. Once they entered into that agreement, their sovereignty was not recognized. So sovereignty was used for purposes of gaining agreements to land, you know, to occupy land, but not once that was done. And so you have this doctrine of quasi-sovereignty that the Native American nations are not fully sovereign. They're subject to the dominion of the United States, but they're sovereign for certain purposes, which sometimes means that they don't have access to U.S. courts. So it's a very malleable doctrine that has been used usually against Native Americans. Any other questions? Comments? Yes.
Are there any, the second
then Michael might be able to expand on it. For us, we've been in this process for over 20 years. Unfortunately, I think Indian gaming plays a role in it now that it hadn't at the time that we applied. There was no Indian gaming, and now that's a factor in it as well. And so even the tribes who have federal recognition in the state are still suffering, if you will, because of Indian gaming, you know. And it's not politically correct, I guess, for politicians to enter into an agreement for a gaming compact, like with the Juneau-Manitoba clauses. More or less political suicide for them. And so I think that's playing a role on many levels in our petition as well. But it's something that we've been in this process for quite some time. But at the same time, we're still trying to provide services for our people, you know, as best as we can without that federal recognition status. But there is, you know, we feel a trend, and especially like I had stated earlier, the size of our tribe hurts us as well. And so it's a process that we're struggling through and have been for some time, but there's lots of things wrong with that process, unfortunately.
Joanna would like to add that this treatment as state that I mentioned is tied to the federal recognition. So to be a water quality standard setter, you have to first be federally recognized. So to play a role as an environmental regulator, you have to go through this process. Now, there's about, I would think, almost 600 now federally recognized tribes. And sometimes you look at the regulated community. They're also maybe not very happy the more and more tribal regulators you have, because they're saying, we have to comply with all kinds of standards, and we don't know where one tribe starts, where the other ends. We're within one state envelope, so to speak, let's say Oklahoma, and within Oklahoma, we have dozens of tribal standards. So there's also that pressure point probably influencing this picture somehow.
And you always hear about, you know, the pie, and the more people that are recognized, there's just a certain amount of funds for federal tribes, and, you know, maybe other tribes lobbying against that as well. And so there's a number of things that play a factor into it. But it's unfortunate because when it comes to our hurricane recovery, we don't have that nation-to-nation relationship with the federal government. So organizations like FEMA, you know, that should be helping us in our recovery don't recognize us as an independent nation. And so other tribes in the state are receiving FEMA assistance, but they haven't suffered nearly what we have by the impacts of the, you know, hurricanes Katrina, Rita, as well as Gustav and Ike. And so that's an unfortunate situation. If there was ever a time that, you know, it should matter if you had that federal recognition status or not, that should be one. But unfortunately, that's not the case. And so we haven't been able to develop that relationship with them, so we're not receiving services that we should be getting. And it's unfortunate as well that they've kept us in this process for over 20 years. We've applied through the Bureau of Indian Affairs, as well as another way you can gain federal recognition is through a bill through Congress. And so we actually had Senator Brill at the time put a bill up for us, but he put it when they were not in session. So there was no way that it would actually get through the process. And Congressman Tozan put up a bill for us, but he had language in it that we would not seek client claim or anything like that. And so, of course, that you should not have to give up that right just in order to get federally recognized. And so, and that would have been lobbied strongly by other tribes as well to set a precedent. And so that bill didn't go anywhere either.
Okay. Well, let's take a 5-minute break, and then we are going to,
In response to this young man's question, and I believe subsequently Brenda has pointed out one of the problems that the UHN had with possibly was the size of the tribe. Just like seeing the size of freaked or whatever.
Because it was small?
I think because it was kind of large. And that's another aspect in relation to your question, being from one of those quote-unquote splinter groups, that there were various reasons for the split. I cannot speak to the veracity. This is the first time I've heard of anything about it. Sort of tape. But not knowing anything about that, there were various reasons for the splintering that went on. speak to possibly a few of those with anyone later time. Just of the things I'm aware of, I'm sure those in our tribe who are much more informed would have